All right. Hey, everyone, and welcome back for another deep dive with us. This time we're going to be tackling a question that I know has been debated for centuries, and that is the whole relationship between law and grace in the Old Testament. But specifically, we're going to be looking at the Israelites when they were at Mount Sinai. And we're going to be looking at that through the lens of a lecture by the biblical scholar Robert Vannoy. Mm. So if you think you know this story already, I think you're in for some surprises today.
Oh, it's definitely a story that I think often gets really oversimplified. People tend to kind of put law and grace against each other. But I think when you really look at it, the reality is it's just much more nuanced.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm hoping that we can really unpack today. Because, I mean, God gives the Israelites all of these commandments, but he also calls them his treasured possession. So how do those two, ideas even fit together?
Yeah, that's a great question. To really kind of understand that, we need to go back and really picture what the Israelites' journey had been up to this point. I mean, they've just experienced this incredible act of grace. God had just miraculously rescued them from slavery in Egypt.
So they're already experiencing like God's favor even before they get to Mount Sinai.
Exactly. And it's really at Mount Sinai where God kind of proposes this covenant with them. You know, he says, if you obey me, you will be my treasured possession, a kingdom of priests and a holy nation.
Okay, so that if though, that sounds kind of conditional, right? Like, so does that mean that they could lose their status as God's people if they messed up?
Well, I think it's a common misconception that the law is about earning God's favor. But as scholars like Walter Kaiser point out, I think the if here isn't about gaining or losing God's love, but it's really about the degree to which they'll experience the blessings of being his people. So think about it this way. Like, you know, a parent loves their child unconditionally, but a child experiences the fullness of that love when they trust and obey their parent.
Right. Okay. So that makes sense. So the Israelites, they're already chosen, they're already beloved, but the law is about helping them to fully live out that reality.
Precisely. Now let's actually talk about this phrase, treasured possession. It's not just some nice sentiment. I mean, it really speaks volumes about God's heart for his people.
Okay. I'm all ears. What makes it so significant?
Well, the Hebrew word used here, sigra, is incredibly powerful. You know, it's not just about earning something. It's about claiming something as your own, you know, intensely personal and protected. Kind of like a king setting apart a special treasure in his vault.
Oh, interesting. And that actually makes me think about how the New Testament talks about Christians being God's very own. Is there a connection there?
You're spot on. The New Testament writers use the Greek equivalent of sigura to describe believers. You find this language in places like Titus 2:14 and 1 Peter 2:9.
Wow. Okay. So this idea of being God's treasured possession, it isn't just an Old Testament concept. I mean, it bridges both Testaments. Hmm. I mean, this really underscores like the continuity of God's love for his people.
And that's why I think this simple phrase is so helpful in really understanding the relationship between law and grace. The law isn't about earning our way into God's heart, but it's about living out the reality of already being his treasured possession.
So the law is not like the opposite of grace.
Yeah.
But it flows from grace. It's guidance for those who are already loved and chosen. This is giving me a whole new perspective.
That's exactly the point. You know, scholars like J.A. Mortar and Gordon Wenham emphasize that the law is given to a redeemed people. It's not a set of hoops to jump through for salvation, but it's a pathway to experiencing the fullness of God's blessings.
Okay, this challenges that common idea that the Old Testament is all about law and judgment, while the New Testament is all about, like, grace and love.
Absolutely. I mean, the Old Testament is filled with grace. Just think about the covenant that God made with Abraham centuries before the law was even given. You know, he promised to bless Abraham and his descendants. And that promise was based purely on God's grace, not on Abraham's merit.
Right. Okay. So we have this, like, this overarching story of grace with the law at Sinai fitting within it. But what about all those specific laws in Exodus, like the ones about, like, everyday life?
Well, that's where we get into what's called the Book of the Covenant. Mm-hmm. It's found in Exodus 21 and 22, and it essentially applies the Ten Commandments to real life situations. So we find laws about murder, adultery, theft, and so on.
Okay, so it's getting practical here. But what makes this Book of the Covenant so fascinating?
Well, here's where it gets really interesting. The Book of the Covenant actually shares some similarities with other ancient law codes from that time period. So we see, like, similar laws and legal structures in you know, cultures like the Sumerians, the Babylonians, the Hittites.
Wait, so you're saying that, like, the Israelites weren't the only ones with these types of laws? I never would guess that.
It might come as a surprise, but it's true. And it actually reveals something really important about how God works. He was speaking to the Israelites within their cultural context, using a legal framework that they were already familiar with.
So God adapted his message to make it understandable to the people of that time. That's fascinating. But does that mean he just, like, copied laws from these other cultures?
That's a great question. And it leads us to another layer of this deep dive. We need to consider the role of Moses in all of this. Was he just a passive recipient of God's laws, or was something else going on?
Okay, so we're talking about Moses and, like, his role in shaping the law. So it sounds like you're kind of suggesting that God used Moses's prior experience to kind of craft these commandments.
Right. Yeah, that's precisely what I'm suggesting. You know, remember, Moses grew up in Pharaoh's court, so he likely had access to the best education that was available, you know, including the legal traditions of that era. So it's totally possible that that God in his wisdom actually used Moses's human experience to shape the law for his people.
Whoa, that's a really thought-provoking idea. It doesn't diminish God's authority at all. It actually, it shows his incredible wisdom in working through human experience. I'm starting to see the Old Testament in a whole new light.
I'm glad to hear that. And this actually brings us back to the Book of the Covenant and its format. So most of the laws are presented in what's called a case law format.
Case law. You mean like Law and Order stuff?
Well, not exactly. But yeah, there are some parallels there. So case law essentially means that it's structured as, you know, if this happens, then this is the consequence. So it's a way of kind of codifying prior judgments and establishing precedents for future situations.
So it's like a legal framework for resolving disputes and maintaining order within society.
Right, exactly. And guess what? This format was actually common in all those ancient Near Eastern law codes we talked about earlier.
Oh, wow. Okay, so it's like God took a familiar legal framework that people already understood.
Yeah.
And he kind of used that to communicate his will.
Precisely. It's another example of God, you know, meeting people where they are, using their existing knowledge and experience as a starting point.
Okay, so we've got this Book of the Covenant full of specific laws that reflect the cultural context of the time, but there are also some key differences, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. While there are similarities in format and even in some specific laws, the Book of the Covenant is ultimately distinct from those other ancient codes. It reflects a uniquely God-centered worldview and a deep concern for, you know, for justice and compassion and holiness.
Can you give us, like, some examples of those differences? Like what sets the Israelite law apart?
Sure. For one thing, the Israelite law explicitly acknowledges the one true God as the ultimate source of authority. So in the other ancient codes, you know, law was often intertwined with mythology and the whims of the gods. But in Exodus, the law flows directly from the character and the commands of Yahweh, the God who has revealed himself to Israel.
Right. That makes sense. The God of Israel is different from those other gods.
Yeah.
So his law would reflect that.
Exactly. And that difference is evident in a lot of the specific laws as well. You know, for example, the Book of the Covenant includes provisions for protecting the poor and vulnerable, like widows, orphans, and foreigners.
Well, that's interesting. So it's not just about, like, punishing wrongdoers. It's about caring for those in need.
Right. It also places limits on retaliation and emphasizes the importance of fair treatment for all, you know, regardless of social status.
So the Israelite law is about more than just you know, maintaining order. It's about reflecting God's character and creating a just and compassionate society.
Precisely. And that's a radical departure from the law codes of the surrounding cultures, which often favored the powerful and wealthy.
Whoa, this is really eye-opening. It's amazing how these, you know, seemingly ancient laws can still speak to us today.
It is, isn't it? The principles underlying these laws are timeless and universal. You know, they reflect God's desire for justice and mercy and righteousness in all human relationships.
Okay, so we've covered a lot of ground here. We've talked about the covenant at Sinai, the concept of treasured possession, the relationship between law and grace, the structure of the Book of the Covenant, and even how it compares to other ancient law codes. It's a lot to take in.
It is, but I hope you're starting to see that the law isn't some arbitrary set of rules imposed on an unwilling people. It's a gift. It's a guide. It's a reflection of God's love and His desire for His people to flourish. And it all begins with grace.
That's a beautiful way to put it. It makes me think about how we view God's expectations for us today. You know, if the law was given in grace to a redeemed people, mm-hmm. how does that change how we approach our own relationship with God and His commands?
That's an excellent question, and one that deserves careful reflection. It challenges us to go beyond a legalistic mindset and see the law as an invitation to deeper intimacy with God, a path to true freedom and wholeness.
I love that. It's not about like checking off boxes, but about drawing closer to God and allowing His grace to transform us from the inside out.
Exactly. And that's a journey that continues throughout both Old and the New Testaments. It's a story of grace, law, and even more grace.
So to bring this all together, it seems like the law isn't the enemy of grace. It's more like a partner in this incredible story of God's love and guidance for His people.
Yeah, it really challenges that idea that like the Old Testament is all about like strict rules and judgment. You know, there's just like so much grace woven into the narrative, even in the midst of the law.
Yeah, and that grace isn't just some abstract concept. I mean, it's tangible, it's active, it's really the very foundation of God's relationship with Israel. I mean, think about it. He chose them. He rescued them. He brought them to Himself. The law it flows from that pre-existing love and commitment. It's like He set them free, and then He said, okay, so here's how to really thrive in this freedom that I've given you.
Exactly. The law in its essence is an act of love. It's God saying, I want what's best for you. I want you to experience the fullness of life, the joy of walking in My ways.
That's a powerful image. And it really like reframes how we view the Old Testament. Mm-hmm. It's not about earning God's favor, but it's about responding to His love with a willing heart.
Precisely. And that response, that obedience, it isn't about, fear or obligation, but about gratitude and delight. It's about saying, yes, God, I trust You. I want to follow Your lead because I know You have my best interests at heart.
Okay. So as we wrap up this deep dive into Exodus, what's like the one key takeaway you want our listener to walk away with regarding law and grace?
I want them to remember that the law isn't the opposite of grace. It's a companion to grace. It's a gift given within a context of already existing love and redemption. And that same grace that was at work in the Old Testament is still available to us today, empowering us to live lives that are pleasing to God.
That's a beautiful thought to end on. It leaves us with a question to ponder, though. How does understanding this grace-filled context of the Old Testament law change how we view our own relationship with God and His expectations for us today?
It's a question worth wrestling with. I encourage you to keep digging deeper into the scriptures. There's always more to discover about God's heart and His plan for humanity.
And that, my friends, is the beauty of a deep dive. You never know what treasures you'll uncover when you take the time to explore with an open mind and a curious heart. Until next time, keep diving deep.